The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on, well, your fruits and veggies. They're very important and can help prevent a stroke. We're going to talk about stroke and blood pressure, lowering it naturally, from an article by Dr. William Davis. Also, time permitting, I want to talk about one of the protocols I use for almost everyone over the age of 35. By 35, your brain is already aging. So we like to think, oh, my brain's not old. I can still remember everything. Well, that's not the case. You're actually aging. So we're going to help to de-age your brain, starting with just one nutrient per week. This week, it's progesterone. And it can improve brain outcome, especially if you've had any kind of brain injury. And this will be new research from Dr. Donald Stein. Also, a completion of an original in-depth investigative report called Deadly Injection, the Hidden Ingredients in Vaccines. Because of the density of the material, and because a lot of it is scientific, I wanted to break it up into little segments that would be easier to retain. That'll be today. Then tomorrow, I will do a opposition piece to the flu vaccine. It'll be the latest actual science of why the flu vaccine does not protect you from the flu and is not safe. You won't want to miss tomorrow's program on that, and that will be posted also. Also today, I've decided not to have a guest in this hour so I can spend more time having you call in and share your points of view on our issue of the day. The issue of the day is, are we becoming a police state? You will hear from Max Blumenthal, From Occupation to Occupy, The Israelicification of American Domestic Security. Stuff I know that people don't know about. Also, from Renee Parsons, who worked with Friends of the Earth for a long time in Washington, D.C., especially on nuclear energy issues. She has written a piece about the indefinite detention that was a bill that was passed and has to be either accepted or rejected by the president. And then America Lurches Towards Full-Blown Tyranny by Professor Stephen Ledman. And we'll have those. So we have a lot to share with you, including a really strong report that goes into great depth about how we got to where we're at today. So let's begin, and I will be taking calls in about 15 or 20 minutes, and then also the latest on the environment. Plus, Pratap Chatterjee, the new cyber industrial complex is spying on us. And Bill Quigley from Aldernet, 20 Ways the Obama Administration Has Intruded on Your Rights, and We're Becoming a Police State. So it's not just my own view that we are a police state, but why are the average American citizens not responding, either on the left or the right? We'll talk about that. But first, let's talk about something we can all agree upon. We should all be living longer, healthier lives, and we're not. There's more obesity, more cancer, heart disease, diabetes than ever before. Why? Well, according to a new article in the peer-reviewed journal Stroke, based upon research done at Karolinska Institute, we're not eating our veggies. And if we did, a lot of good could happen because first we could prevent stroke. Quote, females who consume lots of fruits and vegetables and grains have a lower risk of stroke, even if they have a history of cardiovascular disease, compared to women who don't eat their veggies. Eating antioxidant-rich foods may reduce your risk of stroke by inhibiting oxidative stress and inflammation. This means people should eat more foods such as fruits and vegetables that contribute to total antioxidant capacity. Now, who said that last week? Well, right on this program, you heard it said twice by the Nobel Prize winner that discovered the HIV virus, Luc Montagnier. He said that you could eliminate HIV from the body by having a high antioxidant diet and lowering your oxidative stress and lots of clean water, and especially in third world countries. Now, following on that pattern, if you can eliminate one disease by reducing oxidative stress, and now we can see you can reduce stroke risk, what else can happen? Well, it's all in the free radicals. Oxidative stress occurs when there is an imbalance between the production of free radicals, which damage cells, and your capacity to neutralize them or repair them. And unfortunately, when we exercise, that's good for us, but we also create massive oxidative stress. When you're in any form of stress, you create oxidative stress. When you're overweight, oxidative stress. If you have a disease, itself creates additional oxidative stress. So oxidative stress is right up there as one of the top five reasons why we get sick from all causes and die prematurely. So what can we do to neutralize that and have healthier blood vessels and get rid of that stiff lining of the arteries and turn off inflammation? Vitamin E, vitamin C, flavonoids, carotenoids, antioxidants. That's what. The flavonoids that you're getting from fruits and vegetables improve endothelial function, lower blood pressure, turn off inflammation, and reduce blood clotting. So that means you would have stronger heart, healthier heart, less stroke, less diabetes, less obesity, less colorectal cancer, less arthritis. That's a lot of things good that can happen if we just ate our fruits and vegetables, and better still, juice. I suggest the easiest way of doing it, one day a week, have a 16-ounce glass of juice. Then the second week, add another one. Third week, another. Until you're up to 10 glasses a day. When you're at 10 glasses a day, you're going to be on a really heavy-duty detoxification, and you're going to see the benefits. Allergies, more often than not, gone. Pain and stiffness in your joints and muscular system, gone. Migraine headaches and congestion in your nasal cavities with postnasal drip or mucus, gone. Bloating, distension, gone. More energy. So, now it's time to start. Now, by the way, you want to make sure you're getting your vitamin D, and the best way of getting your vitamin D is to go out in the sun. But if you can't, take 2,000 units of vitamin D. And it can also help prevent type 2 diabetes. From the Endocrine Society, the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, the current issue says that low levels of vitamin D contribute to the development of type 2 diabetes. Therefore, nice amounts of vitamin D, what our body needs, would help prevent it. So get your vitamin D. Now, if you've gone to farmers markets, most of you have in this audience, you've seen the heirloom tomatoes. And when you're looking at the heirloom tomato, you've seen that some are purple and red, and with the purple being close to the bottom and then coming up and then it gets redder. Most people don't buy those because they're not used to the taste. They're a little stronger than the average tomato. And they're not used to how it feels. And that it's not a smooth surface. It has all these little wrinkles in it. Here's why you should buy it and consume it. Even juice it. The purple tomato can fight cancer and other diseases. Some very good research done at the University of São Paulo in Brazil found that the new heirloom, meaning non-genetically modified purple tomato, can help with several different diseases. And, quote, the purple tomato is characterized for its rich anthocyanins, which turn the red color into purple compared with the common tomato. This kind also contains more vitamin C. And they found that it helped reduce oxidative stress and helped prevent certain diseases such as cancer, heart attacks, and degenerative diseases. So, How could you do that so it could be really beneficial for you? Most people are not aware that when you eat a tomato raw, that's good. But when you saute it, very low temperature, it's better. You release more of those anti-cancer agents that are trapped inside the cell. They become more bioavailable. So you're actually getting more. So a low heat flame, put in your favorite oil like olive oil, and then stir in some garlic and onion and cayenne and turmeric, and then use that as a sauce. You can put that over brown rice or veggies or stew, but it's great for you. Now, there's another way of doing it. You can juice it, and if you juice those purple tomatoes and the yellow tomatoes, you'll get a lot of benefit, and then add in some raw sweet onion, some raw garlic, cayenne, and horseradish. Blend that up. Drink it in small amounts, and you might have to dilute it a bit with some water, but that's going to help kill off bacteria and viruses in your throat. It'll help drain your sinuses. It'll help lower blood pressure. It'll kill parasites in your intestine. It's all around terrific. And just another way of getting it in. We have an epidemic of disease in children in the United States. Currently, I'm working on a new film on the pathologizing of our youth. From 18 to day one, children are looked on as an income stream. Unfortunately, until a parent has been in that situation where they had completely healthy children and then saw the impact of the vaccines on them and then tried to convince someone that the vaccines were the problem when the whole medical community denies it, even though more often than not it's true, and or let's say that the child is not told or the parent's not told about the dangers of these fast food vending machines and schools, and the kid ends up diabetic with adult diabetes. So you'd think at some point the American Academy of Pediatrics would get the message that maybe they should put the children's health first, but they haven't. Here's the latest medical news. Quote, one would assume in light of the obesity epidemic amongst the nation's youngsters that Children's Hospital would lead by example in being a role model for healthy eating. No. A new study published in Academic Pediatrics shows that in California hospitals only, 7% of the entrees classified as even being remotely healthy. That means that 93%, I will repeat, 93% of all the entrees served in the hospital is unhealthy. According to a study by researchers at UCLA and RAND Corporation, an assessment of 14 separate venues at the state's 12 major children's hospitals revealed that hospitals were falling short in their offerings and practices of healthy eating. Quote, as health professionals, we understand the connection between healthy eating and good health, and our hospitals should be role models in this regard. Unfortunately, the food in many hospitals is no better, and in some cases worse, than what we find in the fast food restaurant. Well, hello, that's not by accident. Now, pull back from doing just an examination of some statistics and ask yourself why. Why? It's about vendors, contracts, and the deals made between the administration, multiple layers of administration, which are unnecessary, but typically bureaucratic in almost all school systems, and who gets the contract. And you make more money off junk food. So you can build in a nice big profit in serving junk food. That's why. It's not by accident that you have bad food in hospitals or in these schools. And finally, old age remedies like white tea and witch hazel and rose have very beneficial effects. Now, this is from mainstream science. This is Science Daily. Let me quote this. This is from London's Kingston University. quote, age-old remedies could hold the key to treating a wide range of serious medical problems, as well as keeping skin firmer and less wrinkled, according to scientists at London's Kingston University, a collaboration between the university and experts discovered that white tea, witch hazel, and a simple rose hold these properties. The research suggests a number of naturally occurring substances may offer the hope of new treatments to block progression of inflammation. And they take a look at this and having to prevent cancer, diabetes, and arthritis, and also neurodegenerative conditions and cardiovascular and pulmonary problems. Quote, for thousands of years, people used natural remedies to try and sometimes succeed in curing their ailments and preserving their youth, said Professor Naughton from the University School of Life Sciences. Now, the latest research we have carried out suggests a number of naturally occurring substances may offer the hope of new treatments to block the progression of inflammation. Unquote. Well, we know that inflammation is credited with a major role in both the initiation and development of diseases ranging from cancer and diabetes and arthritis. I talk about it all the time on this show. So, the real killer, according to Professor Naughton, quote, inflammation is a secret killer. Helping arrest its development or being able to stop it would clearly be a benefit. So they tested 21 plant extracts. And they got these at Neil's Yard. If you've never been to London, it's just one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And right in the middle of London, you have this little, oh, I guess it's a two-street area called Neil's Yard. And when you walk down this little Neil's Yard, it's as if you're walking into 18th century England. Cobblestones, old buildings, and then you come to a little courtyard. And one little door opens and there's a bakery, and another one there's an herbal garden. And so it's not big. It's maybe 150 feet long, 150 feet wide. But each one of these is just has this wonderful feel to it. And then you go in, and they're not big stores, but they're really, each one's different. They're really neat. And kind of reminds me of when looking at property, and I was looking in Ireland, which would be my first country of choice, outside the United States, and you see these old estates, and they have these wonderful courtyards where you have the horses or other animals, and you got the cobblestones, and you got the tile roofs. Really neat. That's what Neil's Yard looks like. So anyhow, they found these plant extracts, and they then did the research on them and found that there's, quote, efficacy in fighting cancer and in battling aging. Of the 21 extracts, white tea, witch hazel, and rose showed considerable potential, with white tea displaying the most marked results. Quote, indeed, it appeared that drinking a simple cup of white tea might help reduce an individual's risk of cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, and even age-related wrinkles, said Professor Naughton, unquote. Well, now, white tea, green tea, black tea, red tea, they're all coming from the same bush, the same leaf. It's just how they're processed. Most people are not aware of that. They think somehow there's a white tea leaf, no, or a green tea leaf, no. They're all from the same. It's just different stages of processing. And I believe we should be having combinations of all of them. So, but it's good information that mainstream science is finally recognizing what people have known all throughout the world. Natural remedies work. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. to our issue segment of the program. We're doing it a little longer than normal, hence there won't be a guest, because I believe that many of you will have strong opinions on this, and I will hold my own opinions. I'd like for you to share yours. I just want to mention, however, that this evening from 7 to 8 p.m. will be the Progressive Commentary Hour, and we're going to look at the legacy of religion in progressive activism in the Buddhist, Christian, and Jewish traditions. And the question is, can spiritual protest contribute to social and political transformational change? And what differentiates secular protest, what we're seeing now, from spiritual protest, which is what I believe will make the difference? Why is our individual inner revolution to confront our distorted perceptions of ourselves and others essential for initiating an outer revolution directed to social change? Do we need to look at spirituality differently today than we did in the past, given the greater number of threats being exerted by ignorant leaders and authorities we face today? Hence, Rabbi Michael Lerner, Professor Robert Thurman, and Professor Daniel McCannon, all here. And he's the Unitarian Senior Lecturer at Harvard Divinity School, and Professor Thurman's from Columbia University and the Tibet House, and of course Michael Lerner is from the Network for Spiritual Progressives. And just to briefly bring us up to date on this is our producer, Richard Gale, in studio. Hi, Richard. Oh, he's not in studio. Okay. Well, then I just gave you what you need, and that's at 7 p.m. tonight. I might mention that the Progressive Commentary Hour has more unique downloads on it than, and it's gaining. I think last week, do we have Jason in studio? I think it was over 300,000, and that's a lot of people to uniquely download a program. So we're very pleased that all the people are coming on board. So please tune in, listen. I think you'll find it important. Now, here's our issue of the day. And I would like you to call in after you hear everything, not before. I'm going to quote several different people. Most are short. The first comes from Rene Parsons, who had worked for years with Friends of the Earth. If Al-Qaeda needed a recruitment tool for its dwindling numbers, its operatives simply needed to videotape the Senate's recent consideration of the National Defense Authorization Act, Senate Bill 1867. What should have been a serious discussion on the cost and moral authority of the president's endless war policy, stretching U.S. military tentacles around the globe, morphed instead into a platform for endless harangues about American traitors during World War II, inflamed passions about terrorists, bipartisan ravings in fear of Iran, redefining the Constitution, and other warmongering subjects. The grim reality is that with the country presumably on the edge of a cataclysmic deficit crisis, Senate Democrats, who once might have been expected to support the rule of law, lined up on the side of a $690 billion appropriations for the Pentagon, including $119 billion for the Iraq-Afghanistan wars, with no debate on military funding over the country's favored people programs or the constitutionality of a drone attacks. Once the House of Representatives approved their H.R. 1540, the Senate, with 90 progressive Democrats and 6 Republicans against the act in the House, the legislation was referred to the Senate Armed Services Committee with legislative oversight for all things military, including the Department of Defense. Normal parliamentary procedure would have seen the act referred to other committees with shared authority. A series of public hearings would have been conducted with debate on amendments before the committee vote sent the bill to the Senate floor. But that's not how these proceedings were. Instead, as if a congressional approval rating of 9% doesn't matter, the autocratic procedure offers proof positive the Senate not only deserves a lower rating, but more importantly, that democracy is on very thin threads. Not only did the committee violate its own legislative procedures, which protect the public's right to know, it never issued its customary committee report in public. As a result, it was finally voted 93-7. An overwhelming majority, including almost all the Democrats, support this tyranny. Now, this is from a different perspective, but one that is also represents a certain group of voices out there. I'm going to share this. This is from Max Blumenthal, published just this past, I guess yesterday. But it ties in, and you'll see quickly how it ties in. I'll quote this verbatim from Occupation to Occupy, the Israelification of American Domestic Security. In October, the Alameda County Sheriff's Department turned parts of the campus at the University of California in Berkeley into an urban battlefield. The occasion was Urban Shield 2011, an annual SWAT team exposition organized to promote, quote, mutual response, collaboration, and competition between heavily militarized police strike forces representing law enforcement departments across the United States and foreign nations. At the time, the Alameda County Sheriff's Department was preparing for an imminent confrontation with the nascent Occupy movement that had set up camp in downtown Oakland and would demonstrate the brunt of its repressive capacity against the demonstrators a month later when it attacked the encampment with tear gas and rubber bullet rounds, leaving an Iraq war veteran in critical condition and dozens injured. According to Police Magazine, a law enforcement trade publication, quote, law enforcement agencies responded to Occupy protesters in Northern California, credit Urban Shield for their effective teamwork, unquote. Training alongside the American police departments at Urban Shield was YAMAM, Y-A-M-A-M, an Israeli border police unit that claims to specialize in, quote, counterterror operations, but is better known for its extrajudicial assassinations of Palestinian militant leaders and long record of repression and abuses in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. Urban Shield also featured a unit from the military of Bahrain, which had just crushed a largely nonviolent democratic uprising by opening fire on protest camps and arresting, wounding demonstrators when they attempted to enter hospitals. And while the involvement of Bahraini soldiers in the drills was a novel phenomenon, the presence of quasi-military Israeli police, whose participation in Urban Shield 2011 was not reported anywhere in the U.S. media, not once. And it reflected a disturbing but all too common feature of the post-9/11 American security landscape. The Israelification of America's security apparatus, recently unleashed in full force against the Occupy Wall Street movement, has taken place at every level of law enforcement and in areas that have yet to be exposed. The phenomenon has been documented in bits and pieces through occasional news reports that typically highlight Israel's national security prowess without examining the problematic nature of working with a country accused of grave human rights abuses. But it has never been the subject of a national discussion. Never. And collaboration between American-Israeli cops is just the tip of the iceberg. Having been schooled in Israeli tactics perfected during a 63-year experience of controlling, dispossessing, and occupying an indigenous population, local police forces have adapted them to monitor Muslim and immigrant neighborhoods in the United States cities. Meanwhile, former Israeli military officers have been hired to spearhead security operations at American airports and suburban shopping malls, leading to a wave of disturbing incidents of racial profiling, intimidation, and FBI interrogations of innocent, unsuspecting individuals. Revelations like these have raised serious questions about the extent to which Israel-inspired tactics are being used to suppress the occupying movement. The process of Israelification began in the immediate wake of 9/11, when national panic led federal and municipal law enforcement officials to beseech Israel's security honchos for advice and training. America's Israeli lobby exploited the climate of hysteria, providing thousands of top cops with all-expense-paid trips to Israel and stateside training sessions with Israeli military and intelligence officials. By now, police chiefs of major American cities who have not yet been on junkets to Israel are the exception. Quote, Israel is the Harvard of anti-terrorism, said former U.S. Capitol Police Chief Terrence Gaynor, who now serves as the U.S. Senate Sergeant of Arms. Kathy Lehner, the chief of Washington's Metropolitan Police, remarked, quote, no experience in my life has had more of an impact on doing my job than going to Israel. One would say it is the front line. Barnett Jones, the police chief of Ann Arbor, Michigan, said of Israel, quote, we're in a global war. Karen Greenberg, the director of Fordham School of Law Center on National Security and a leading expert on terror and civil liberties, said the Israeli influence on American law enforcement is so extensive that it bled into street-level police conduct. Quote, after 9/11, we reached out to the Israelis on many fronts, and one of those fronts was torture. Greenberg told me the training in Iraq and Afghanistan on torture was Israeli training. There has been a huge downside to taking our cue from the Israelis, and now we're going to spread that into the fabric of everyday American life. It's counterterrorism creep, and it's exactly what you could have predicted would have happened. The Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, or JINSA, is at the heart of the American-Israeli law enforcement collaboration. JINSA is a Jerusalem and Washington, D.C.-based think tank known for stridently neoconservative policy positions on Israel's policy towards the Palestinians and its brinkmanship with Iran. The group's board of directors boasts of who's who of neocon ideologues. Two former JINSA advisors who have also consulted for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Douglas Feith and Richard Perle, went on to serve in the Department of Defense under George Bush, playing influential roles in pushing us to invade and occupy Iraq. Through its law enforcement education program, JINSA claims to have arranged Israeli-led training sessions for 9,000 American law enforcement officials at the federal, state, and municipal level. Quote, the Israelis changed the way we do business regarding homeland security in New Jersey, so said Richard Funtis, the New York State Police Superintendent, and said after attending the JINSA-sponsored Israeli trip and subsequent JINSA conference alongside 435 other law enforcement officers. During one session, JINSA brought 14 senior American law enforcement officials to Israel to receive instruction from their counterparts. The Americans were trained in, quote, how to secure large venues such as shopping malls, sporting events, and concerts. JINSA's website reported escorted by Brigadier General Simon Perry, an Israeli police attaché and former Mossad official, the group toured the Israeli Separation Wall, now mandatory stop for American cops on junkets to Israel. Quote, American officials learned about the mindset of a suicide bomber and how to spot trouble signs, according to JINSA, and they are now schooled in Israeli killing methods. Quote, although the police are typically told to aim for the chest when shooting because it is the largest target, the Israelis are teaching American officers to aim for the head so as not to detonate an explosion that might be strapped to the torso. Kathy Lanner, now the chief of Washington, D.C.'s Metropolitan Police Department, was among the law enforcement officials junketed to Israel by JINSA. Quote, I was the bomb unit and the SWAT team and all those high-profile specialized Israeli units, and I learned a tremendous amount. I took 82 pages of notes while I was there, which I later brought back and used to formulate a lot of what I later used to create and formulate the Homeland Security Terrorism Bureau and the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department. Well, some of the police chiefs who have taken part in JINSA's LEAP program have done so under the auspices of the Police Executive Research Forum, a private nonprofit group with close ties to the Department of Homeland Security. And anyhow, goes into greater depth about how 45,000 American law enforcement officials have been taught on all of this. So then the question is, when you're seeing the Occupy group being dealt with, and as harshly as they are, and you ask a basic question, why in front of you are a bunch of college kids, some idealist, some maybe homeless, but all unarmed, nonviolent, sitting with arms locked, why would you feel that you needed to be in full SWAT anti-terrorism gear and then pepper spray, beat them, shoot bullets at them, sound cannons at them, tase them? Why? They represented zero threat. Now we know. This is how the Israelis deal with everything when it comes to being the brain inside of America's empty skull. So that, now we have Occupy meets occupation. When a riot squad from the New York's police department destroyed and evicted the Occupy Wall Street protest encampment at Zuccotti Park in downtown Manhattan, department leadership drew on the anti-terroring tactics they refined since 9/11, and this, much of this, was learned from the Israelis. And now to one other one here. which represents a pretty large number of people. This is from Bill Quigley. 20 ways the Obama administration has intruded on your rights. Now, this is, you have to stand back and look at all this, because each of these pieces of this puzzle about how you become a totalitarian state, how you become a police state, how you have overreactions to from the police to what seems like, you know, very benign protests. This is how we got there. This is from Bill Quigley, Alternate. Quote, "The Obama administration has affirmed, continued, and expanded almost all of the draconian domestic civil liberties intrusions pioneered under the Bush administration. Here are 20 examples of serious assaults on the domestic rights to freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of association, the right to privacy, the right to a fair trial, freedom of religion, and freedom of conscience that have occurred since the Obama administration has assumed power. Consider these and then decide if there's any fundamental difference between the Bush presidency and the Obama presidency in the area of domestic civil liberties." The Patriot Act. On May 27, 2011, President Obama, over widespread bipartisan objection, approved a congressional four-year extension of the controversial parts of the Patriot Act that were set to expire. Obama signed a similar extension of the Patriot Act for 1 year. These provisions allow the government, with permission from a special secret court, to seize records without your knowledge, conduct secret surveillance of anyone that they suspect that has ties or has no ties to terrorist groups, and obtain secret roving wiretaps on anyone in America. Criminalization of dissent and militarization of the police. Anyone who has gone to a peace or justice protest in recent years has seen it. Local police have been turned into SWAT teams and SWAT teams into heavily armored military. Officer friendly or even officer unfriendly has given way to police uniformly, like soldiers with SWAT shields, shin guards, heavy vests, military helmets, visors, and vastly increased firepower, accompanied by helicopters, special tanks, and even sound blasting vehicles first used in Iraq. Wireless fingerprint scanners first used by troops in Iraq are now being utilized by local police departments to check motorists. Facial recognition software introduced into war zones is now being used in the United States. Drones, just like the ones used in Kosovo, Iraq, and Afghanistan, are being used along the Mexican and Canadian borders. These activities could continue to expand, may be used all over the United States, in every city in the United States. Wiretaps. Wiretaps for oral, electronic, and wire communications approved by federal and state courts are at an all-time high. In fact, wiretaps in 2010 were up 34% from the previous year. Criminalization of speech. Muslims in the United States have been targeted by the Obama Department of Justice for inflammatory things they said or published on the Internet. First Amendment protection, freedom of speech, most recently stated in a 1969 Supreme Court decision, Brandenburg versus Ohio, says the government cannot punish inflammatory speech even if it advocates violence unless it is likely to incite or produce such action. A Pakistani resident legally living in the United States was indicted by the Department of Justice in September of this year for uploading a video on YouTube. The Department of Justice said the video was supportive of terrorist activity, even though there was nothing of violence in the video. Domestic government spying on Muslim communities. In activities that offend freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and several other laws, the NYPD and the CIA have partnered to conduct intelligence operatives against Muslim communities in New York and elsewhere. The CIA is prohibited from spying on Americans, but does so anyhow. And it works with police on human mapping, commonly known as racial and religious profiling, to spy on Muslim community. Under the Obama administration, the Associated Press reported just a few months ago that informants known as mosque crawlers monitor every sermon, every bookstore, and every cafe that Muslims attend. Top Secret America. In July 2010, the Washington Post released Top Secret America, a series of articles detailing the results of a two-year investigation into the rapidly expanding world of homeland security intelligence and counterterrorism. It found 1,271 government organizations, 1,931 private companies work on counterterrorism, homeland security, and intelligence at 10,000 separate locations across the U.S. every single day. They intercept 1.7 billion of your emails, phone calls, and other types of communication. The FBI has a secret database named Guardian that contains reports of suspicious activities and it keeps it on file. According to the Washington Post, Guardian contains 161,148 files as of just 1 year. Other domestic spying. There are at least 72 fusion centers around the U.S. which collect local domestic police information and merge it into multi-jurisdictional intelligence centers. According to a recent report from ACLU, these centers share information on federal, state, and local law enforcement and some private companies to secretly spy on Americans. They are growing and flourishing under the Obama administration. Abuse of FBI intelligence operations. The Electronic Frontier Foundation documented thousands of violations of the law by the FBI intelligence operations and estimates that there are over 4,000 such violations each year. Yet President Obama has not caused one single investigation, even though there are 4,000 violations by the FBI per year. Nor has he done anything to the FBI, CIA, or other spy agencies. WikiLeaks. The publication of U.S. diplomatic cables by WikiLeaks and then by mainstream news outlets sparked condemnation by Obama administration officials who said the publication of accurate government documents was nothing less than an attack on the United States. Censorship of books by the CIA. In 2011, the CIA demanded extensive cuts from a memoir by former FBI agent Ali Soufan, in part because it made the agency look bad. Blocking publication of photos of U.S. soldiers abusing prisoners. President Obama reversed his position and actually refused to allow any photos of the abuse at Abu Ghraib to be published. Technological spying. The Bay Area Transit System. Just a few months ago, there were hearings of rumors to protest against fatal shootings by their police, shut down call service in four stations. Western companies sell mail surveillance software to repressive regimes in China, Libya, and Syria, and now they're being in the United States, too. Spy on Americans without warrant. The use of state secrets to shield governments and others. When the Bush government was caught hiring private planes from a Boeing subsidiary to transport people for torture to other countries, the Bush administration successfully asked a federal trial court to dismiss the case by a detainee's torture because having a trial would disclose state secrets. Obama has not only increased, but multiply increased, and now has more of these secrets than any other president in American recent history. Material support. The Obama administration successfully asked the U.S. Supreme Court not to apply the First Amendment and to allow the government to criminalize humanitarian aid and legal activities of people providing advice or support to foreign organizations which are listed on the government's list of terrorist activities. Chicago anti-war grand jury investigation, then there's also Bradley Manning, solitary confinement, and then special administration measures. This is from Bill Quigley, professor of law at Loyola University, New Orleans College of Law. Those are some of the reasons why I believe that we are in trouble. There are others. This is a very short piece from Pratap Chatterjee. Quote, we live digital lives now, flitting from Facebook to YouTube, checking our iPhones and Blackberries, and chatting with our loved ones on Skype. Very few of us worry too much about tweeting our personal opinions on politics or chatting with a new social network friend on the other side of the world. But you should. All these interactions have become fodder for a new industry that secretly vacuums up the data, preserves it forever on high-end servers that holds many petabytes, a million gigabytes of information. This industry offers new tools to search that data and reconstruct your past. Every email, every photograph, every phone call, the recording of every phone call, they have it all. WikiLeaks has just released the spy files, a trove of 300 documents that shows the companies that are involved in this. Bugging the phones, that's old news. Bugging everything in your life, that's the new news. And finally, this is from Stephen Ledman. Now, he goes through the, quote, America's move steadily towards eroding democracy entirely. Justification given is war on terror, hokum, incrementally international, constitutional, and statute laws have been trashed. Equality, justice, and other democratic values long ago were abandoned to advance America's imperium. And then he goes into how we got there. And I suggest you read this. It's up on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com as of today. It goes through the entire history of one act after another. November 25th, 2002, Homeland Security Act, centralized unprecedented executive branch military and law enforcement. October 17th, 2006, the Military Commissions Act scrapped habeas corpus protection for domestic and foreign enemies, including citizens of the United States. And then it shows you every one of these civil liberties violations right up till the day. The trouble is, none of this was being discussed in the mainstream media and much of the alternative media as well. And that's why we end up where we are today. Your thoughts? Give us a call, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Voice representing, let's say, his own and Alex Jones and other people, but a lot of people out there are concerned. And this is from Natural News, and I'll share this with you. It's short. It says, "Dear Natural News readers, in a stunning move that has civil libertarians stuttering with disbelief, the U.S. Senate has just passed a bill that effectively ends the Bill of Rights in the United States. This bill passed late last night, 93-7, declares the entire U.S. a battleground upon which U.S. military forces can operate with impunity, overriding posse comitatus, and granting military the unchecked power to arrest, detain, interrogate, and even assassinate U.S. citizens with impunity. It's being called the most traitorous act ever witnessed in the Senate, and the language of the bill is clearly designed to make you think it doesn't apply to Americans. But toward the end of the bill, it essentially says it can apply to Americans, quote, if we want to, unquote. Even Wired magazine was outraged at this bill, reporting, quote, the detention mandate to use indefinite military detention in terrorism cases isn't limited to foreigners. It's confusing because two different sections of the bill seem to contradict each other, but in the judgment of the University of Texas, Robert Chesney, a nonpartisan authority on military detention, U.S. citizens are included in the grant of detention authority," unquote. There you have it. Let's say hello to Mario from New Jersey. Hi, Mario.
Good afternoon, Dr. Noll. Thank you for taking my call. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. I've been listening to you for many years, and it seems that as the years go by, things seem to be getting worse and worse here in the United States and all over the world. And it's very disappointing. In listening to your show and also to the Richard Martin show, Richard seems to think that we should all leave the United States. But where are you going to go? And what's your opinion of that in what's happening in the U.S.?
On that, Richard Martin and I share a difference of opinion. I believe that only when it gets this bad and even worse will Americans wake up. I believe that before we point the finger at the 99 self-righteous percent, pointing it at the demons of the 1%, we have to ask ourselves, how did Walmart get the money it makes? How did we elect Barack Obama? How did we elect Bill Clinton, including the unions electing Bill Clinton after he sold them out and drove a stake through the union's heart and caused 2 million of their jobs to be lost? How did he co-opt the environmental movement? I'll deal with the environmental movement, what Bill Clinton and Al Gore did to the environmental movement, that the environmentalists should have been ashamed of, and I challenged the entire environmental movement at the UN on Earth Day this year when I called them out for being hypocrites and sellouts, and the whole room was filled with them. All right, watch that video, because I don't compromise when I take on these people. I shame on the environmental movement. It's been co-opted to its core, and all because they wanted to be friends with the corporate Democrats, who they thought were just really together because they wore blue jeans and penny loafers. Yeah. And made by slave labor. In any case, only when you face the truth that you are the problem and that you have enabled the banks, where's your money put? Why do you use their credit card? Why do you accept that contract at 25% interest and they tell you in the ad, oh, we're going to give you 2% back. Oh, we get 2% back. My God, I better go out and buy something because I'm getting 2% back, even though I'm spending 28%, which means that, gee whiz, 2% to me, 28% to them. If I'm late, it goes to 50% or 100%. They're not holding you with a gun to your head and demanding that your kid drink a milkshake and eat French fries and a hamburger. They don't pull you through the television set and say, hey, can't deal with your life? Then take this tranquilizer. Take Prozac and Paxil. When your kid dies of suicide, don't blame us. Just call yourself another prescription for yourself to deal with your pain. Obesity, bankruptcies, homes we shouldn't have had, people we should never have voted into office, including all the presidents within your lifetime. At what point did the 99% also have to take some responsibility? Oh, my God. Take responsibility. Did I just say something that we should never say? Yes, I'm calling out the 99%. The reason you have a 1% is because of what you didn't pay attention to, what you chose to be ignorant on. Who forced you to watch those clowns? Who forced you to eat the hamburgers? Who forced you to vote for these people when they showed by their intent and their actions that they didn't like you, hated you, and your only value in the United States was economic exploitation? Your response, sir.
Making changes. How do we go about
get off the grid? Stop watching television, any of it. Stop watching. Stop listening to the radio show. Stop reading. Stop buying their product. If you want to make a difference, then get off the grid. Only when you stop eating their hamburgers, hot dogs, french fries, taking their medications, wearing their clothes, living in their houses, you know, the dream house that you must live on like everyone else on the block so you all can see each other and hear each other and live in this stupid little environment. Stop living through their myth of the story of your life. Then you'll have a life. Until then, it's just a creepy, really creepy hypocrisy that somehow we're on the side of the angels and they're all evil. Well, how did they get the power? We gave it to them. Thank you for your call. David from New Rochelle, your turn.
Hi there. Yes, Gary. If I were super rich and in the middle or just a bit to the right, this is exactly what I would want. I would want to get rid of the Bill of Rights. I'd want the Supreme Court voting like it is so that money is what controls politics and political decisions. It's exactly what I would want. What I would be most fearful of is somebody taking my money. And that's the solution, is to have a dictatorship, have a military state, just like all those places in South America used to be. That is exactly what I would want, and that's exactly what we're going to get because of it.
You're right. Obama's been the perfect candidate, as was Clinton and Bush, for those who want absolute power. They are the oligarchs, and they've done the same thing. Look at Russia. Look at Egypt. Look at Italy. Look anywhere in the world where you have a selective group of excessively wealthy people. They control the laws. We have ALEC, a group of corporations that controls the legislative outcome in the United States. We have these fools, these real sellouts. We don't have a populist legislature. If you can pay enough money and you get these people to sponsor you, you get elected, but then you have to do their bidding. So, of course, they're going to give you a militarization act, and you're going to spend $1.4 trillion on and off the books for Department of Defense, yet you will have hungry children. You will have no home that has stopped being dispossessed, no car stopped being repossessed. You will not have a living wage paid to people who are now struggling and have to work two jobs and still don't make enough to pay their bills. That is because the rich,
hey Larry,
the rich come from insecurity, and they're getting exactly what they want because they bought all the people necessary to give it to them to make it legal. No different than in the Second World War, the Nazis, one of the very first things they did, they got their Reichstag to pass laws that would determine that they could use euthanasia as a way of mercifully getting rid of people. Then you couldn't be punished because you participated in it. Think of what the militarization of our police has done. Think of the fact that right now every phone call, every email is being monitored. If that doesn't bother you, then you are not participating in your own life.
Can I say one more thing, Larry?
Sure, Gary.
Oh, Gary, I'm sorry. I'm just nervous talking on the phone. People say, oh, no, it can't happen here because everybody has guns here, you know? Well, I mean, you bring in the army with all of its stuff, you haven't got a prayer. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's going to happen. It's in the books. The Supreme Court is in on it. Everybody's in on it of power. Obama is in on it. That's just the way it's going to happen, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. Nothing.
Well, there are things we can do, individually and then as groups. They have underestimated the power of people to get out of their lazy zone, to get off their fat, dead asses, and actually do something constructive except turn a channel or take a drug or eat a hot fudge sundae. There are millions of Americans and millions of people around the world who are saying, no, I won't support you. Remember, they only have their wealth if we buy their products or support them in their actions. If we say no, and we mean it, and we don't live this hypocritical life of saying, well, we're against you, but we're going to buy your food, we're going to shop in your Walmarts, we're going to go to your movie theaters, we're going to listen to you on radio and television, we're going to buy your records, well, then what part of no are you against? This is the hypocrisy I see that's palpable. So here's my suggestion. Get off the grid completely from them. There are enough products made in the USA, enough support groups out there that you don't need them at any level. Mario, thank you very much. Alan from Brooklyn, your turn. Oh, wait, let's go into our studio. I'm sorry. In studio is Richard Gale. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I called on you earlier, but you weren't there.
Oh, I was probably upstairs or over in the legal room. Anyway, we have our progressive commentary hour, 7 to 8 p.m. this evening, Eastern Time. And we have a very special program. It's somewhat related to what you've been commenting on this afternoon. And we're going to be looking at, well, a bit of the historical legacy of religion and progressive activism and spiritual protest for transformational change. So I think it's going to be a wonderful conversation looking at values to underlie protests. There can be protest that brings further chaos, and there could be protests that also can produce constructive change. And our guests are going to be Rabbi Michael Lerner, who's been on before, Robert Thurman, the chair of Indo-Tibetan Studies at Columbia University, and Professor Daniel McCannon, the Ralph Waldo Emerson Unitarian Senior Lecturer at Harvard Divinity School. So they'll be speaking from the Buddhist perspective, Christian and Jewish. And
tonight at 7 o'clock, it is a program you will not want to miss. The most downloaded radio program in the United States. In fact, is Jason in studio?
No, he's not.
Elizabeth wasn't there. Nobody was there when I needed
Elizabeth is. Elizabeth's here now.
Okay, but we're running out of time. By the way, Professor Lindman's program can be heard every Thursday at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. And we have all of his articles, including all the articles I read from today, up on our website. Tomorrow, I'm going to be doing a very important in-depth report on why the flu vaccine is not what they claim. It's neither safe nor effective. I'll finish up the rest of it. Jason is now in studio. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Gary. I actually just had a question that was sent to me through email from Elaine from Brooklyn. I thought maybe you can help us out with here. She listens to Progressive Radio Network on PRN.FM all the time. She also watches Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz, and she supports you, and she also supports them. But she wanted to know, really, about Obama. What is the likelihood that he will be elected, and what is the likelihood that there will be a third party in the elections?
There will not be a third party. If there was, it would be Ron Paul, and he would be the one I would support. Not because I agree with many of his positions. I certainly disagree with him on gay rights and some other issues, but I sure do agree with Ron Paul when it comes to don't give Israel preferential treatment over other and destabilize the area. Get our war apparatus out of all countries in the world. Close down the Federal Reserve. Stop all monies to banks and Wall Street firms. If it's too big to fail, let it fail. All of those, I agree with Ron Paul. Plus, he would take the teeth out of the FDA's special interest groups that protect the pharmaceutical industry. So on at least 15 separate issues, he is on the right side of the issue, but he will not be allowed. Barack Obama right now, unless there's something that happens to challenge it, will be the next president for several reasons. One, who's going to vote for him? Well, you're going to have most African Americans voting for him, period. Then you're going to have most women who have a college education voting for him because they're offended by how stupid and just complete morons all the Republican candidates are. I mean, if you voted for any of the three stooges, they would be better than any of the existing Republicans. They're just idiots. Next, you're going to have the liberal establishment that just doesn't have the brains of a sock, that doesn't have any capacity for self-criticism, vote for him. Well, better Obama, you know, better the devil we know and the devil we don't know. No, because when you vote for Obama, you are voting for all of the things that you should be against. You're voting for a person that has changed nothing to the progressive side or humanistic side or environmental side. He has co-opted out on every single issue. Yet in spite of all that, the liberals will vote for him. The Democrats will vote for him. Why? Because he's their leader. The Hispanics will vote for Obama because they see him as the path to citizenship for their illegals, and the Hispanic leaders will look at him because he is the Democratic Party. The union rank and file will vote for him because, just like with Clinton, they seem not to understand history or choose to look at the fact that they've been betrayed and sold out by their leadership for a long time. And here's the irony. The biggest supporters of Obama will be big business. Now, you've heard this fool's game that, oh, he's a socialist and, oh, he's the most left. None of that is true. Obama has done more for big business than any president, including more than Bush. He supports the military-industrial complex, the pharmaceutical complex, the for-profit hospitalization, the for-profit insurance, private insurance industry. He supports big oil, nuclear, gas, hydrofracking, and coal. In fact, he was the one sponsoring clean coal, and he wants 100 new nuclear facilities. He supports no restrictions upon any of the hedge funds, equity partnerships, derivatives, or the Federal Reserve. He is loved by big business. The media love him, and other minority groups also align with him. And probably 20-30% of independents who feel that, well, why let a vote waste? I wouldn't have voted for him, but I will. So that gives him what he needs to win probably by 5-10%. And that means we'll just get everything doubled down. But in the next 4 years, since he will be a lame duck, that is when you will see, as the gentleman who called earlier, you will see the complete elimination of our Bill of Rights and constitutional provisions. We will be at that point living in a police state, but all because of terrorism and all because there are bad people out there, and we Americans must be protected. And don't question the cost, because as Panetta, head of the Defense Department, says, we can't cut these budgets, you know. And as Sean Hannity and others will say, don't cut the military budget. So it'll be a feeding frenzy. It's as if you were have 1,000 great white sharks and unlimited supply of blood being poured into water and churned for them. They're going to eat until there's nothing left of the American economy. You think they're smarter than that? They're smart enough to have pulled this off. But once you start, you can't stop. once you get into that whole binging on greed, binging on power, there's no restraint because nothing's coming from the spiritual side that would give pause. It is all happening. Hope that answers your question. I'm Gary Knoll. We'll talk with Elizabeth tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone. And tonight, 7 p.m., Progressive Commentary Hour.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tabenfeld.